Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Joining me in studio are Joe Manis, St. Louis Public Radio political reporter. Terry Jones is the Founders Professor of Political Science and Public Policy Administration at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Marshall Griffin is St. Louis Public Radio's State House reporter, and he joins us from Jefferson City. Thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Joe, let me begin with you as our political reporter. Did the fact that it's an election year have any kind of an influence on this session?
No, and there's no gambling in the casino.
Smile. I smile right. as I ask the question, of course.
No, I mean, there was a lot about the election coming up that dealt with this. I mean, for example, the gun bills, the paycheck protection fight, or the labor payments of dues.
They know there's an election this year.
Yeah, all of that, especially because it came up in the last few days. Mm-hmm. It was very clear. I mean, the legislators were trying to get as much done as they can that would help them in the fall, not just with their base, but also with their donors. In fact, the paycheck protection fight in the Senate, there was a lot of talk in the halls about Richard knowing that this is Ron Richard, who is the Senate president pro tem, knowing that he probably didn't have the votes, but he had to conduct the vote to send a message to his donors. I mean, we're hearing that it's all over the Capitol. So if the donors who were for it would understand they didn't have the votes. Now, I'm not saying that's good or bad, but
That's life.
That's life. Yeah. And at least it was up front. People knew that's what was going on.
And Marshall, there was the fuel tax, which did not pass, which I guess could be related to the election season. Also, voter ID.
Yes. And, you know, the fuel tax issue just kind of went away. It got a committee hearing in the House, got a vote, got passed by a House committee, and then that was it. It was not brought up at all during the final week, which I think reflects the attitude of the House leaders towards any type of tax increase, but including a fuel tax. They wanted nothing to do with this. Earlier in the session, Todd Richardson brought up the cost share program, which actually did get revived in the state budget that begins July 1st, and suggesting shifting money from other things, specifically Medicaid. And there was no appetite at all among House leaders to raise the fuel tax.
Terry, any sense of which party came out better in this whole process in terms of response by voters?
The Republican Party so controls the Missouri General Assembly that it's their show and they are writing the script. And the script included you having members of the General Assembly, selected members such as Kurt Schaefer, the senator from Boone County, and Eric Schmidt, a senator from St. Louis County, who are running for statewide office, and it started their campaigns during the session.
Yeah, and well, I think, though, particularly, let's say, photo ID. I mean, because as people know, we do have voter ID in this state. It's just we didn't have a requirement of a photo ID. The photo ID fight, which is very complicated because it's a two-pronged thing. They have to have two different bills. One that goes straight on the ballot does not need the governor's signature to go on the ballot, and it will be on the ballot. The other one, which is the implementation bill, is on the governor's desk, but the Democrats succeeded in softening it up some. But even then, when we were talking to the governor on Friday, the governor indicated he will probably veto it out of principle. And so, again, some of this is not just being practical of what can I get best. Some of it is to make a point.
But it has no bearing on the constitutional amendment vote.
No. Right. But see, the implementation bill can't go into effect until there is a constitutional amendment passed. And, I mean, Nixon could veto it, and then it comes up, it'll be the next governor, whether it be Chris Koster or one of the Republicans. They'll have to deal with the implementation bill if it passes. And both the amendment and the implementation bill for photo ID both make it clear that they will provide free photo IDs for people who don't have them. Well, the estimated cost of that is several million dollars a year. And if that's not allocated in the budget, I mean, everybody's agreeing that, well, then it can't go into effect. So, and because there's going to be the feds watching this too. So you have a situation where people are doing things, looking at their base, seeing what, you know, their base wants this. They figure that this would help bring out conservatives to the polls in November if this constitutional amendment is on the ballot. Actually, the governor thinks the same, but he thinks actually it could bring other people out. But so everyone is talking about that, not just the key parts of the bill. It's how it affects things politically.
Terry, let me ask you about this, because I've kind of had a feeling that, just as Joe said, a lot of conservatives would be voting in November, perhaps not so many in August. That's when the governor might be tempted to put it on the ballot. What do you think?
No, the August ballot will have a very competitive race for governor for the nomination, with four strong candidates, all having substantial campaign treasuries. There's really not as much happening on the Democratic side, although there was a contest for attorney general that will draw some interest. So the electorate is going to be tilted towards Republicans in August,
yes,
but it'll be more evenly spread in November.
Yes, yes.
So everybody seems pretty much agreed that's what he's going to do.
Yeah.
Yes. So. Yeah, he made that. He all but said it. I mean, he made it pretty clear. He said, I'm leaning towards November. He said, I want to be where there's the most people. But a lot of it, some of it's also from what Professor Jones said. I mean, the August ballot in a statewide election year in Missouri for the last 6-8 years, there's more Republican competitive races, so far more conservatives. The percentage of conservatives that turn out in August is much higher.
Marshall, is there any sense of when the governor might be bringing out his veto pen again, and on what? Do we have any hints along those lines?
Well, I mean, there's roughly 100 bills, I don't have the exact number in front of me, that were passed, and some of them are going to get vetoed. It's just a matter of which ones. There's always there's usually a bit of a surprise every year about which ones he vetoes. He's often vetoed bills that the Republican leadership thought they had, you know, some type of agreement on. Mainly I'm thinking of the student transfer bill that got vetoed 2 years in a row, and that you know, there was no serious effort to even bring that back up this year. So there's, you know, something always gets vetoed.
Any sense here at the table about?
Well, other than the implementation bill for the photo ID, I think people are going to be watching to see what the governor does with the crime bill that has the stand your ground provisions in it, mm-hmm. because there's some other stuff in there that people want on both sides, especially, you know, Democrats and some groups, because it's interesting that bill has some stuff that would make it more scrutiny on police officers, how they deal with suspects. But at the same time, there's a provision in there that says that you can, I mean, the way it's worded is that you can be armed in any public place and defend yourself. You do not have to feel under personal threat. So in other words, you could just pull out your gun and fire. So that's how some people are interpreting the language that was put in, because it was so broad. Because
they're calling it a license to murder.
Yes. In fact, that's what some of the critics said on the floor. Now, the governor said he was kind of stunned by it. I mean, on Friday, he said, because this all came up in the last 48 hours. I think he figured that wasn't going to be put on. And then when they saw the wording, it's like, jiminy. So I think he's going to have to decide whether he vetoes it to make a point, knowing that other stuff that's in the bill that they want, like stalking protections, the police stuff, other things, or, I mean, just to make a point, they got 114 votes on final passage in the House, which is several more that it's needed. It got a veto-proof majority in the Senate, if I'm correct. So, but whether or not that stands, I mean, it depends how he plays it over the summer, whether he really pushes it. But the governor may not, because he's A, a sportsman, he shoots. B, he's got other Democrats who may want to tell him to kind of play that down, and let's just see if there's maybe a court case on it or some other way to curb that without us, you know, making look like we're too anti-gun, because they're all afraid of the NRA.
Yeah. Terry, we've talked before about proposals that were on the table weeks ago to allow college students to carry weapons. That's a moot point now, I guess, with this legislation as it's written.
Just about anybody can.
Any public place.
To add to what Joe said, historically, Governor Nixon has chosen not to make the Second Amendment a battleground politically and has avoided confrontation with the NRA and other gun interests.
How does Governor Nixon come out of this session? Of course, he's a lame duck. He's only got a few months left to go. But how did he fare?
Not so good in terms, but of course he knew that going in. He's dealing with a veto-proof majorities in both houses. So getting a crumb here and a minor victory there is, was about as good as it was going to get, and that's what he received.
Yeah. I think his biggest takeaway was the failure to override the paycheck protection veto in the Senate that came down to one vote. Ironically, one of Nixon's biggest critics within his own party, Maria Chappelle Nadal, was the one who cast the deciding vote that meant that upheld the governor's veto.
And certainly he is happy about the rejection of the religious freedom bill as well.
Yes, he made a very big point of that in his closing thing. He thought that was perhaps the biggest achievement because he thought that the General Assembly, he said, cooler heads eventually prevailed on that.
And the threat that that would present it to economic development plans statewide.
I want to pick up on that specific point when we come back, but let's take our break now. We'll do that. This is our postmortem, we're calling it, following the end of the Missouri legislative session on Friday. My guests in studio are Professor Terry Jones and Joe Manis, political reporter. Joining us from Jefferson City is our Statehouse reporter, Marshall Griffin. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Joe Manis, Terry Jones, and Marshall Griffin. Terry, let me come back to you. This didn't get a lot of attention during the course of this session. I'm talking now about TIFs and the fact that they've added some restrictions to TIFs, tax increment financing. As the public policy guy, how do you view that?
It's another restriction on local governments, so they are not particularly happy about it. Earlier in legislative history, other taxing units, such as school districts and special districts, were given some role on TIF commissions, and this new legislation will give those commissions a stronger voice. The movement here is the libertarians primarily within the Republican Party who do not think that that kind of interference in the marketplace is sound public policy, and so they were happy with their victory in getting this TIF legislation passed.
What's it going to do to development? I mean, municipalities have relied so heavily on it.
I think they'll still find ways to help out. So I think the impact will be not dramatic, but just marginal.
Right. Any thoughts about that, Jeff?
Well, there's been contention for years that TIFs actually don't. I mean, while they may provide short-term development, they don't really help the tax situations, communities, because it's usually tax deferred for 20, 25 years. And so this is really part of the effort, as Professor Jones said, by some of the fiscal conservatives within the Republican Party and libertarians who are against that kind of stuff. They're also against some of these state tax credits. State tax credits, I mean, suck out over $600 million a year from the state coffers. And there's been pushes about curbing that, getting rid of it. And in fact, you know, Governor Nixon had pushed for that a couple years ago. So this is all part of that. But it is interesting that they really didn't talk about it that much. It's just kind of quietly went through and nobody said hardly anything.
Yeah, tax credits, Marshall, is something that we hear about every year, but not so much this year.
No, yeah, the real battle over tax credits here at the Capitol kind of petered out a few years ago because of there was just the stark difference between not the governor's office so much in Republicans, but House Republicans versus Senate Republicans. You know, there was a number of Republican, fiscally conservative Republicans in the Senate who were determined to not approve any tax credits, any new ones or even existing ones, unless they were brought under legislative oversight, unless, you know, they were accounted for in the budget every year, something that House Republicans strongly opposed. And that battle went on for years, even as the leaders in the respective chambers changed. And so it just kind of became a more of a back burner issue that I think they just decided to defer to whenever there may be a new governor in office. Not that that would, may not make much of a difference between House and Senate leaders. But that particular battle has cooled off in recent years.
You know, a lot of fantasy sports fans are wondering what the new regulations on fantasy sports are going to mean to them. What will it mean to them, Marshall?
Well, for starters, if you're under the age of 21, you can't play anymore, or at least not until at least you can play until August 28th. Now, there's a new age limit on that, on participation as well. The really big change, though, will be for the operators of the fantasy sports sites. They'll have to pony up a pretty big chunk of their revenue in taxes. I believe it's 21.5% that they'll have to pay in taxes in the state of Missouri starting August 28th.
So how do they know that I'm over 21 or under 21 when I go to play fantasy baseball or whatever?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I believe each website will bear the responsibility for being able to prove that their players are of legal age. So I recommend maybe going on DraftKings. I'm not endorsing DraftKings or any other particular one, but maybe try one out and see just exactly what the age ranges are and how you can get beyond that, at least after August 28th.
Well, I think I'm safe in saying that every one of us participating in this program can play fantasy sports without any age problem.
Right.
All right. Now, one of the big issues, once again, and the legislature doesn't seem to be able to go the full distance on the ethics deal. There was some ethics legislation passed, but not everything that a lot of people wanted.
Right, correct. Actually, what finally ended up passing was kind of a shadow of what originally had been proposed, so much so that House Speaker Todd Richardson said in his closing speech that ethics changes will be on his top priority again next year. And basically, I mean, the guts of them is that they approved a provision so that a legislator has to wait 6 months before becoming a lobbyist, which is hardly anything.
I mean, you can hold your breath that long.
Yeah, because there had been a push to make it like 5 years or at least 1 or 2 years. Just so your listeners know, if you go to the state capitol, you see tons of former legislators. They're all lobbyists, and they all hang around the third floor in this rotunda area, and they really know what's going on. So half the time you run out there and say, "What's going on?" And they'll tell you. Then they also approve, so it's not really a gift ban. It's like $40 per legislator per event. So it's, which basically can, that means the free meals can still continue. Because it's per lobbyist, the lobbyists can group together to make sure you still get your baseball tickets. So it was sort of a shadow of it. One of the things that it did do, there is a provision that bars legislators from being consultants to other politicians while they're in the General Assembly. That had been an issue the last few years. So they did curb that, although, of course, that doesn't go into effect for a few months. But overall, the stuff that people had thought might come through didn't happen. And part of this, and this kind of goes back to a couple of the other issues you talked about, including the tax credits. This is all the impact of term limits. You've got a lot of legislators who, some of the influential ones now, they're going to be out in a year, and so they want to be able to do some of these things, so they don't want to be putting curbs on themselves. They don't make that much money. They make under $40,000 a year. So they, and yet their former colleagues are hanging around the third floor rotunda area making hundreds of thousands. So they want to cash in on that. I mean, that sounds crass, but that's part of what's going on.
Well, that's the way it works, right, Terry?
Right. And if you're a legislator, you could resign your position right now if you're in term limited and your last, that's just your last time. And while you would miss out on the veto session, you would have your 6 months expired by January and you'd be ready to go for the next session,
right,
as a lobbyist.
Is this kind of like the fox guarding the hen house thing, in as much as can you expect the legislators to actually pass something that's going to work against them, particularly when you're talking the dollars you are?
Frankly, you probably almost have to go initiative petition. Yeah, you're almost going to have to do that. And see, what's interesting is that initiative petition was how they got term limits on the ballot to begin with back in 92. I mean, that's when voters approved it. And, of course, it didn't go into effect until 94. But then you really saw the hit when it hit the eight-year mark around 2000, 2002. And that's when everybody left. So you've really seen the impact the last 14 years. And I think that even though some legislators, some of the new crop, are seeing that by the time you know what's going on, you're – time's up, and some of them are lamenting it, But I personally think because of some of these other pressures and thinking, oh, gee, I can make good money in 6 months, that the only way you're going to have it is if there's an initial petition drive and get some sort of term limit proposal back on the ballot. And even then, there are some national groups who it's to their advantage to keep term limits in place in Missouri and these other states, and they're prepared to spend big money to defeat them.
It's always comforting to know that the politicians are in it for the money, right?
Well,
they're in it for the power.
Yeah,
now, sometimes
right.
Power comes and the money are come together.
Exactly.
But they like both aspects of it.
Exactly. And to be fair, anybody who runs for a House or Senate seat in the General Assembly, I mean, it's not like they're going to get a whole lot of attention. I mean, so many of these people really do care. They have often a particular issue that they care about, and they're hoping that they can, during their time, fix this or fix that. So it's not just about the money. It's just as they're there longer and they're seeing what the situation is and seeing the reality that many people decide, well, what the heck? You know, I mean, that's sort of what you're up against.
As our time begins to wind down, there's another issue we have to get to. Marshall, I'll start with you on this. And this is the issue of prescription drugs and opioids. A lot of people are disappointed that Missouri hasn't joined the rest of the country in dealing with a database on prescription drugs.
And it's not going to come anytime soon. It likely won't happen next year either. And one reason for that is one person is fairly instrumental in keeping that from becoming law, and that is State Senator Rob Schaff from St. Joseph. He has been a very strong opponent of what the House at least got passed, and that was in the one that got a little bit of debate last week on the floor, a prescription drug monitoring program that would give doctors access to a prescription database. He calls that an invasion of privacy and erosion of individual people's rights. And he's proposed one that would it basically increase the number of state employees working for the Department of Health, and they would have the ones that would be able to access the database, not doctors. Now, some people basically, see that as well. Schaff's proposal wasn't that genuine. He mainly just wants to kill the other version. And it worked. It's dead for another year.
Until after term, after he's out.
Right. Until after he's out.
Yes. We've only got a minute.
I don't think he's out next year.
We've got less than a minute left, and we're the only state out of the 50 that doesn't do this. Thoughts, Terry?
It's a classic example of how one senator in the legislative body, if he makes it his number one issue, he's passionate about it, we're willing to work hard on it, can keep something from happening.
Final thought, we only have a few seconds left, about what we've just gone through.
Kick the can down the road on infrastructure one more time.
Joe?
Yeah, well, I think it'd be interesting to see how the Republican candidates for governor interpret what happens. So far, only one of them has made any public statements about this or that, including Stand Your Ground.
Marshall, in 10 seconds.
Which veto will Governor Nixon travel the state this summer to try to persuade lawmakers and people to uphold?
We will wait and see. Thank you, Joe Mattis, Marshall Griffin, and Professor Terry Jones. Great to have you with us once again. It's on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.